You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. You're joining us for a very special hour of high strategy with one of the most thoughtful men I know. He is Mark Helprin, a senior fellow with the Claremont Institute for the Study of Statesmanship and Political Philosophy, an author of myriad best-selling works of fiction and nonfiction, many of which have been translated into foreign languages, in some cases dozens. His most recent book is In Sunlight and in Shadow. He has served in the British Merchant Navy and the Israeli Defense Forces. He is also a dear friend, and I'm very appreciative of his time today. Mark, you were talking about the efforts that the Chinese and Russians, and we'll be talking more about both of them in detail in a moment, but just finish this thought about the help that they're giving one of the tinderboxes, as you put it, the Middle East, and specifically the Iranian regime.
Yeah, as in the First World War, all these centers of power have their own allies. Who are our allies? NATO, the Europeans, who are practically dead. You know, they don't spend any money on defense, and they certainly are very responsible. They're not going to start with military initiatives any place or making a war any place. But the smaller allies of Russia and China are used to really tie us down and to make mischief, as well as to advance the agenda of Russia or the agenda of China. For example, North Korea. China uses North Korea to tie us down in Northern Asia, but it's a very dangerous game because the North Koreans, and this is not seminar language, but the North Koreans are obviously nut burgers, and anything could happen there. They also use Iran. Iran finances the North Korean missile effort, and there could be an exchange of nuclear warheads if, for instance, the Iranian warheads were knocked out, the Iranian nuclear capacity was knocked out by Israel, or, it should always only be the United States. The Russians are now actually fighting in Syria along with the Iranians and Hezbollah and what's left of the Syrian military.
Mark Helprin is our guest. He is talking with us about the sort of international order that is emerging. And Mark, you were just making the observation that the Russians and Chinese are seeing fit to use surrogates or proxies to tie us down or otherwise enhance their strategic position vis-a-vis the United States. To the extent that that's going on, describe for us what Vladimir Putin's purpose is, specifically vis-a-vis the United States, but what do you think he's up to more generally, not just in Syria, not just with respect to North Korea, but more generally?
More generally, he wants to restore the position of Russia into something that closely resembles or even exceeds the position of the former Soviet Union. And the way he does this, unfortunately, is playing with fire. He takes risks. One of the reasons he does so is because he knows he has a very soft president in the United States who won't do anything or, in fact, will help him. I mean, after all, look at it. In Syria, as an example, he is supporting Assad, and so are the Iranians. In effect, the Russians and the Iranians and various Shia organizations are fighting in coordination with, as allies against the opponents of the Assad regime. And this will result in a bridge from Afghanistan to the Mediterranean, breaking the Middle East in half, essentially what we wanted to do in the 50s with what was called CENTO, or the Central Treaty Organization, where we wanted to get Turkey, Iraq, and Iran into a treaty organization to be a containment of Russia to the north. We couldn't succeed in doing that. The United States, after World War II, the greatest power in the world, we had power then, which was many times what we have now, and we couldn't succeed in doing that. Putin is doing it with the aid of Iran. And what's so totally insane about it is that not only with the aid of Iran, but with the aid of the United States of America. We are giving Iran a certain path to nuclear weapons in this agreement that they haven't even signed, They don't honor it. They don't intend to honor it. They won't honor it. They do their own inspections, et cetera. It's totally insane. And we give them $150 billion to finance this war that they're fighting along with Putin, largely against our allies. For example, the Turks are being shifted around from their pro-Islamist position because right now they are being surrounded by Russia. Russia has always been a threat to the north. Now it's in the southern part of Turkey. They're being outflanked. So what's happening is that by playing with fire and with the aid of essentially, I could say that our administration is appeasing, but that would be too weak. They are capitulating, aiding, deliberately giving, sending them money, and you know, for instance, all sanctions on Iran vis-a-vis weapons have been more or less lifted, and so that the material that they need, not only for the creation of nuclear weapons, which they've been stealing it and smuggling it and making it themselves, but now they can just buy it, and they can also buy the material for delivering nuclear weapons.
And a whole host of other weapons with which to threaten our forces in the Gulf and so on. All right, but Mark, stay with me with Vladimir Putin for another moment. You talked about one of the other tinderboxes being the Baltics. And I think actually said that you thought that Putin may try to take back the Baltic states, which are now members of NATO. What is his idea with respect to NATO? Is it the case, in your view, as I believe, that he's bent on, as you say, building a sort of better Soviet Union, not necessarily communist, but one that will have greatly diminished the opposition by essentially showing that NATO is a paper tiger or worse? Mark Halperin, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that Putin must think just about every day about the three Baltic republics, because given that Russia has immense military forces relative to what's in the Baltic republics in Kaliningrad, which is on the other side of them and below them, so that, you know, they have these tremendous forces stationed there, plus the forces that actually on the border of Russia, they could conquer the three Baltic republics in 6 hours if they wanted, and you know, a sudden blitzkrieg of 6 hours, literally. Now, he doesn't do that because, first of all, it would alert the West. Secondly, it's NATO. But imagine building a pretext, as he did in the Ukraine. You start with this regular warfare, making accusations, electronic warfare, et cetera. You build it up. Meanwhile, you're testing the resolution of NATO and the United States. NATO has talked big about the Baltic republics, but thus far, for fear of alienating Russia, we haven't really sent forces there that are even vaguely sufficient for deterring a Russian invasion. So we have a tripwire there, but we don't necessarily have the will to go to war with Russia, which is, after all, a nuclear power, which has a different nuclear doctrine with a lower threshold in behalf of these three republics. In other words, we're supporting them very weakly. And by doing that, we are continually holding out in front of Putin a prize that he must think, well, you know, maybe they'll go to war based on this. Maybe they'll find the backbone to do it. Maybe they won't. And depending upon how the situation develops and how he makes it develop, eventually you might have a situation where he could say, okay, you know, go. And in six hours, they're gone.
Mark, we have to pause for a moment. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about other aspects of the Putin agenda, particularly the nuclear threats that are now emanating from his regime. That and more with Mark Halperin right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.